Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Pitch. Swing and a long drive, deep left, way back,
gone! All right, welcome back to another Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. It's been a couple of weeks here now, so you were traveling out there, at least I was, to the All-Star Game, Futures Game, all that good stuff. We got the All-Star break. Games kick back off again this weekend in the minor leagues and in the major leagues. Of course, we did have complex league ball going on the whole time, so you want to sell those guys short. But here we are, we're returning. Dylan fought a tree and he got some poison ivy, sumac, oak. We're not sure which one. I don't know what you guys have in Canada. It's ivy down here, but I think there might be some poison sumac floating around as well. But you're going through it, man. It hasn't been great for you the last couple of weeks, so prayers up for Dylan.
Yes, please. But I think I'm going to get popped for PEDs with all the steroid cream I'm going to be rubbing all over my arms. So maybe
luckily
that's what happened to Orelvis.
The NFBC doesn't test for that, as far as I know. So you should be okay. Though you might be the only NFBC player on steroids, but I don't know that. There's probably a couple of them that are.
Yeah, I'm sure there are quite a few, actually.
Yeah, I don't know the NFBC layout like you, so yeah. And I don't want to make any wild accusations about potential steroid use within the NFBC community, you know. They already had the cheating scandal. We want to make this any worse, you know. And that was on the football side. Maybe the football guys.
Yeah.
Baseball guys, clean, apple pie, baseball-loving Americans and Canadians who also like baseball and maple syrup.
That's right.
Poutine.
A lot of overall main event overall winners from Canada, Dussault and Rob Silver, and
there's a lot of them. They're partially Canadians, man.
Well, we got we know what to do.
You know what to do. It's your education system. It's surpassed us in terms of predictions within baseball and statistical analysis. There you go. It's just part of your culture there, you know. I appreciate that. Hockey, you know, and NFPC baseball. You guys kill it. Well, maybe it was because you had imaginary teams after, you know, Montreal left. It's been a sad season for the Blue Jays. So
exactly. You
got to do something to take your mind off it, you know. Are they all Ontario guys or like some Quebec? What's the mixture here of the main event winners? What provinces are they from?
Rob Silver's from Ottawa, Ontario. Dussault, I think, is just outside Montreal. So that's Quebec.
Ooh.
I'm in Toronto.
Yeah. So a couple of Ontario guys in Quebec. It's like the NHL draft. You might get a couple of Cowboys from Manitoba or something, you know? All right, enough with the Canadian talk.
Yeah.
Sorry, Americans. Trying to take your mind off of things here. But that said, we got some lefties coming back. Robbie Ray returns this week, probably. I think the
The Wednesday, they said.
Pretty good.
He's starting Wednesday against the Angels.
Oh, okay. Starting Wednesday against the Angels. Coming back this week.
Not bad.
For all you guys that held on to Robbie Ray, it's not a bad payoff. Somebody was offering him in my 30-team Dynasty League where I already have like 8 pitchers that are on the IL with long-term injuries. And I was like, you know, it's intriguing because I need the innings. But at the same time, I'm not so sure I want to get in bed with another injury-plagued, you know, guy with some elbow concerns. So, yeah, staying away from Robbie Ray on that one. But he's returning. It's a good ballpark in San Francisco. So that's a pretty good setup for Ray. How are you viewing him sort of rest of season in terms of where he lays out in the starting pitching spectrum of rankings? Just for league draft, not dynasty.
Yeah, I think he's like 60th pitcher. Some projections have him 60th or so. So that's like a SP4. Obviously, how he does in his first couple starts will move that up or down. It's kind of a conservative inning projection and conservative rate stat projection. I'm a bit leery. I don't have him anywhere except in my home league. I have him stashed. It's kind of cheap. Like there's not much risk there. So I'll see how he does. I may not even throw him this week because I don't know if he'll go 5 innings. But, you know, if you need strikeouts and if you need to take a shot at someone who can put up some like elite stats for the next couple weeks, you know, I think it's worth doing. Like I'll bid on him next on Sunday when he's eligible to be bid on at FAB and FBC. I'll definitely be bidding on him.
Yeah, I think it's a worthwhile name to go out there and grab if you're in a shallow enough league that he's available. Certainly makes sense, you know, and there's pretty big upside, especially if the entry cost is fairly low. I think that makes a lot of sense. We got another one. So James Paxton, DFA'd, kind of surprisingly, like the numbers haven't been that bad. He's been not great, but fairly consistent. I think there's a lot of rotations in this league that would take James Paxton in a heartbeat. We'll probably see one at him sometime in the next 48 hours, I'd say. Clayton Kershaw is returning, though. What are your expectations for Kershaw? He's been good when he's been healthy, even over the last couple of years, but it is back injuries. It's just one of these things where those don't really get better. He's kind of doing the Roger Clemens thing, it seems, like late in his career. Of course, he was in his 40s when he did this, but like, you know, pitching half a season. It seems like that's going to kind of be the Kershaw we're going to see at this point where, you know, 25 starts is probably even out of the question going forward. So how do you view Kershaw rest of season?
I think I have him ahead of Robbie Ray. He was touching 94, I think, in his last rehab start. He's aiming for 5 innings, I think, when he pitches on Thursday. That might be optimistic, but I don't know. It seems I've had him stashed in my Dynasty League. I have him in DC with Brian Slack. So I've been kind of paying attention to Kershaw and how he's doing. I went in with low expectations when it seemed like he wasn't going to be back till July. But now I'm getting my hopes up because it looks like he's kind of back into form. I think DFAing Paxton speaks a lot of kind of their faith in Kershaw in a way. They have River Ryan called up. I think he's starting Tuesday. They're penciling in Glass now for Wednesday, who's been injured as well. Yamamoto's not going to be back till September. So like, they don't have the luxury of DFAing Paxton unless Kershaw is back, I guess, is kind of my point. So I think that to me is kind of like behind the scenes, reading between the lines that they're kind of confident in Kershaw. So I'm more confident in Kershaw than Ray. I think he'll have better rate stats. He may not have the strikeouts that Ray has, and he may not get the innings that Ray has, but I think with the Dodgers as the better team, he may get more wins. So I think Kershaw over Ray, and I would bid on both on Sunday in my redraft leagues.
I think that's pretty reasonable. If you're one of these lonely James Paxton managers, what do you do there, Dylan?
I think you got to drop him. I had people dropping him in two of my redraft leagues in FBC even before the news. So he's been overperforming his metrics all season. He has an ERA of 4.43, I think, but his like Sierra and XFIP are, I think, significantly higher. I actually don't know. But his projections aren't good. He's obviously been overperforming, as evidenced by the fact the Dodgers, even though they've gotten, you know, reasonable WAR from him, that they're still cutting him loose. So I think in redraft, obviously you have to let him go, even if he lands in a place where he'll continue pitching. In Dynasty, yeah, I'm not really sure. I mean, he was effective. Like I said, on the surface, he was effective, and the Dodgers cut him. So, like, I don't know if he's holding up a roster spot or you're stuck between dropping him and someone else. I think you may have to drop him.
Yeah, I think it's a tough predicament people find themselves in. Obviously, deeper leagues, you probably have the ability to stash him a little bit more. But there you go. You know, interesting. Another one. Happy news, happy days. Mike Trout might be back this weekend.
Yes. It was interesting because there wasn't any news for a while. And then there was news that he hadn't even started running yet. He hadn't even been on the treadmill. And so it seemed really pessimistic. I know he was dropped in some NFBC leagues after that. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, I'm aiming to be back by July. And it does sound like he's back this weekend, possibly Friday. I think he's doing two rehab games this week, and then they're going to decide if he's coming back Friday. I think that'll be great if he is. I have him in a league, my competitor in my other dynasty league that I'm very much competing in. He has him, so it's kind of a bittersweet situation there. But obviously it's great for baseball if Trout comes back. I'm sure the Angels will be selling, so it's, you know, it's not going to be great for the Angels necessarily, but I think it's just great for the spirit of baseball for Mike Trout to be on the field and jacking home runs.
There you go. I need him. He's on my on my Tout Wars team, which has been struggling over the last few weeks. I've dropped into third place, so a lot of it's offense and saves and holds. Like I'm just not getting saves and holds. That's like my worst category in that league. Everything else is like 10 to 11, 15, whatever, like somewhere in that range, high-end stuff. And I got like a 4 in saves holds. But the problem is, as soon as I put in some saves hold guys, I then get hurt on my innings and my Ks. Yeah. So yeah. I was like, I don't know if I like this trade-off that much. So maybe you got to lean in like every other week. I got to figure it out, you know? Got to figure something out there, Dylan. But Trout coming back is going to help me tremendously because – I have had to pick up quite a few players offensively off of the scrap heap, and that's never great. Bad news now, because we're mixing in good news and bad news. Yamamoto not back until September. Oh, man, this is a killer.
Yeah, it's it seems to be back and forth with the news. It's like, yeah, he's doing a long toss in the outfield, and then it's like, oh, yeah, now he's aiming for hopefully late August, but very optimistic it'll be September. And like it's hard to read the tea leaves there, but it seems, you know, they invested quite a lot in him. He's going to be a very important part of their playoff run as well. Like I was talking about in the Kershaw thing, you know, they have faith that Kershaw will be available, but you know, you can't really rely on him. So they really want to make sure he's available. Yamamoto's available for September. So hurts my best performing DC. Because he was our third round pick. Our first round pick was Acuna. So it hasn't been that great, though we are still in the top in the money right now. So I would hope he comes back sooner rather than later. But it's the trade-off for Yamamoto not being back until September is Kodai Senga should be back with the Mets. Japanese pitcher for Japanese pitcher. I think that's the quota. If one goes out, one has to come back in. He'll be back with the Mets and hoping to go 5 innings. I think this weekend he'll be going. So that's a little bit of a silver lining for Yamamoto going down or staying down.
Yeah. More Dodgers news because everything revolves around the Dodgers. Daniel Hudson looks like he might be the new closer as Evan Phillips is now out of the closer role. What's your take on this? I know that was kind of a Sunday fab bid there as we were sleepy coming back from the All-Star break. So what are your thoughts on Hudson? Do you think he keeps the job or you think this is a temporary switch?
That's a good question. I think he will run with the job for at least the next few weeks. They're trying to ease Evan Phillips back in. I think he's going to be an important part of important bullpen piece for them. it was interesting because what happened was Hudson got a save before the All-Star break, and then he got a save coming back at the All-Star break. So it was like two straight save situations that he got, but they were kind of separated by that break. And then yesterday they were up 6-3 in the ninth. This is the late game, the late Sunday game before Fab. And then in the save situation, it went to 9-3. And then Evan Phillips came in and gave up like three straight hits. And then Dave Roberts, before the game, was kind of cagey, saying, oh, yeah, you know, we're going to run with him as the closer role. We're going to give him a long leash or whatever. And then he, you know, had to be bailed out and Daniel Hudson came in. And so we actually raised our bid. We were going to bid like $7, $6. And then like, oh, Evan Phillips is blowing it. And we raised our bid to 21 and we got him. And it turned out, so the NFBC every week does sort of like a summary of the Fab bids. Turned out that Daniel Hudson was the big bidder. So in half the leagues, it was sort of like he was the big crown jewel. Nice. And the other half, people weren't really paying attention. So I think he's been very effective. I think he will get at least, you know, the next couple saves. As long as he doesn't like get blown up, he'll probably stay in that role for a while. And then, you know, they want Vessia and they want Phillips to all be effective. I'm sure they may trade for a bullpen piece too. Like, you know, Tanner Scott's been rumored. I think even AJ Puck and maybe some of the Texas guys, Jose Leclerc, Kirby Yates, David Robertson are kind of rumored as well. So I kind of expect the Dodgers to shore up their bullpen. I don't know if they're going to get a closer per se, but, yeah, I mean, I'm happy that we got Daniel Hudson. Let me put it that way. And I think he'll get at least, you know, 2 to 5 saves, fingers crossed, minimum. And then, you know, he may, you know, become a sort of part of a three-headed bullpen or something with Phillips and whoever else they get.
Yeah. And to close out on the Dodgers news here, River Ryan making his debut as we speak, as we record this on Monday evening, 95-97 in the first inning. So it's kind of interesting. Last bit of news before we jump into the main topic here, kind of bury the lead a little bit. We're going to be talking some FYPD, kind of loosely just what my thoughts are and where I would kind of hash out the top 10 or so, moving a couple other guys. I still feel like, yeah, you could put out an FYPD list right now, or you could wait until like October and drop it like right after the season, when most of the FYPDs are probably taking place, December, January, February, some probably even into March. Things will change a lot between now and then. And I think especially in this class where, you know, you talk to anybody that's just involved in the draft process and it feels like from like 11 to 40, there is a lot of like ambiguity. Like there's nobody that I think is set in stone in certain spots. It's going to be a big year in terms of your preferences and who you like. So we'll talk a little bit about that. But last bit of news, Ozzie Albies out 6 to 8 weeks with a broken wrist. The positive news is Nacho Alvarez gets called up. It's a fan favorite. You know, Atlanta's still in the mix of the playoffs. I don't know if this team has championship aspirations. The last time we wrote them off because of injuries, they went and won the World Series. But they're 9 games behind the Phillies right now. And, you know, in terms of the NL wild card, they're 3 games back from the Brewers at the moment. So, you know, I think that's a little bit of an issue. You know, we'll see if they get into the playoffs or not. But for a team that entered the year is, you know, potentially the favorite alongside the Dodgers in the NL, certainly in the NL East, it's been kind of a hell season for them, unfortunately, with the rash of injuries to some of their best players, some of the best players in the game, you know, between Albies and of course Acuna, and then Max Fried hits the IL as well. And he's been dealing with some elbow stuff kind of dating back to last year.
Yeah. And of course they lost Spencer Strider as well. So Michael Harris on the
IL. I erased Strider from my memory after the whole labor, you know.
yes, I understand. I wish I could also. It's hard to kind of shake out of your mind that they're not like the powerhouse that they were. Matt Olson has not been Matt Olson that we expect. Austin Riley has been turning it on a bit, but it's really like the Marcell Ozuna show. So they've got Schwellenbach in the rotation. I think they called up Schuster to take Fried's spot. So they're kind of limping along. It's not great, but I am very interested to see how Nacho Alvarez does. He's always, he's always done well in RoboScout, you know, good hit tool, good on base, maybe not the most power, maybe not the most steals, but, you know, he should be a nice piece kind of in the Luis Arias light, that type of mold where a lot of base hits and maybe not that much power, but still kind of valuable for a fantasy right. team.
I think the angles are a little better than Arias. Like, I think there might be a little bit more power there. He's not as much of an albatross defensively as Arias is. He's not a shortstop, but can play a pretty competent third base and the same thing with second base. You know, I don't think he's going to be a first baseman. So obviously with Ozzy Albies going down second base is going to be the spot. But like, yeah, I don't think he's going to have some of those same restrictions. But, you know, this isn't something that we ever were concerned with previously, but it does feel a little bit like we're at this point where you have some concerns about hitters making the jump from AAA to the major leagues. You know, saw Jackson Holliday. James Wood's been better than Jackson Holliday, but just barely. We've just gotten a little bit more counting stats. He hasn't been great either. You know, I think there's still time to turn it on. And Holliday's starting to hit again AAA, so we could see him shortly again, whether with the Orioles or somewhere else, maybe. Mm-hmm. Never know. Intrigue as we lead up to the trade deadline. But yeah, like I think it's one of those things where I felt like in years past, the jump didn't seem as drastic or just had better prospects. And we didn't see the same sort of struggles that we have seen initially with a lot of players and on the hitting side. And I think pitching is always expected. Like we always expect pitching rookie pitchers to be inconsistent. You know, anytime they have an ERA below 4 in their rookie season, it's sort of like a surprise. Like, it's like, this is like a gift from the baseball fantasy gods, because they're a little bit different from the regular baseball gods, the fantasy gods. I'm not sure which one's responsible for all the pitching elbow injuries, but who knows? We'll find out in the afterlife. But yeah, I think it's just one of those things. So that being said, I don't think we have to go into that too much. Let's take a quick break right now, Dylan. When we come back, we're going to talk some FYPD. What do you say?
Let's do it.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to improve any dog's health: their food. What she's discovered is that the way that many dog foods are made can actually create toxins that can be wrecking your dog's health. And this is true for even many premium brands. Fortunately, she's found that just by adding a few special superfoods to her dog's food, she saw huge transformations in their health. She's made a 20-minute video explaining step-by-step how anyone could do the same thing to see incredible changes to their dog's health. I've got two dogs, and I want them to be with me for a very long time. There's a lot of good stuff here that made me think about how most dog foods are made, what to avoid for my dogs, and superfoods that are great for them. If you want to keep your dog healthy and happy, go to badlandsfood.com/baseball and watch Catherine's video right now. Again, that's BADLANDSFOOD.com/baseball. I don't know about you, but I love fall. Fall is a time where the weather just feels perfect from the start of the day to the end. It's a great time for me to get on a bike, take a good long ride where it's nice and crisp, not cold, but crisp. And it's time for new fall traditions, like getting regular hydration and energy from Liquid IV. Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier Plus Energy delivers 100 milligrams of natural caffeine plus 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, so you can accomplish all the things you want and need to do. And they've combined their popular peach flavor with the highly requested blackberry to awaken your senses and keep you coming back for more. Liquid IV makes my workouts more enjoyable. It's really easy to prep. I just take my water bottle, fill it with water, some ice, pour in the Liquid IV, stir it up, it's ready to go. It gives me better hydration than I would if I was just using water. It's something that just makes those bike rides even more enjoyable than they were before. Hydration Multiplier Plus Energy delivers energy comparable to 1 to 2 cups of coffee through about 100 milligrams of naturally occurring caffeine. Experience the deliciousness of one of our best-selling flavors, peach, perfectly paired with the highly requested blackberry. It's an all-in-one formula that provides mind and body energy plus hydration that leaves you feeling focused, alert, and ready to take on anything. Tear, pour, live more. One stick and 16 ounces of water hydrates better than water alone. powered by Live Hydroscience, an optimized ratio of electrolytes, essential vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients that turn ordinary water into extraordinary hydration. Three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink. Eight essential vitamins and nutrients. Always non-GMO, vegan, gluten-free, dairy-free, and soy-free. Start a new fall tradition with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code BA2022 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code BA2022 at liquidiv.com.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
All right. And we're back. All right, Dylan, as we mentioned, I think we'll just probably mock out like the first 10 picks and I can talk a little bit about these players. You're still learning these young bucks and you've seen some data. You're familiar with some of the players at the top of the class. But, you know, I'm coming out of the draft. I was working the draft table. I was there live. In Fort Worth at the, I think it's the Cowtail Coliseum. Apologies to my Texan listeners out there if I said the wrong name. I could probably Google it and be smart, but it was the Cowtail Coliseum. Elvis performed there. They let us know that. And there's a lot of rodeo stuff. They have rodeos there. So it was a real interesting setup, really kind of cool. It was air conditioned enough that it wasn't hot. So I was comfortable throughout the entire shindig. And being at the draft is always pretty fun. It's tiring. It's kind of the end of the trip for me, at least, where I'm there. Prospect pad, futures game, draft, and then it's like, all right, ship them back to the East Coast. Next year, the draft's in Atlanta, so it's on the East Coast. So it's the first time I won't have to take like a 4-hour flight. I was a little bit under that, actually, coming back from Dallas. But, you know, I had L.A., the winter meetings in San Diego. I had Seattle. Yeah. I had Dallas, Atlanta, shorter flight. I'm okay with that. And then it's Philly in a couple of years. That's either like a 50-minute flight for me if I decide to fly out there, or I could drive and it's like 6 hours. But fun little road trip action. I like being in the car. I like being in control and piloting my own mission. So control freak, Dylan. That's what it comes down to. That being said, let's talk a little bit of draft. So let's jump right into it. 1-1. I think there's a lot of debate at this pick right now. Probably not. Maybe only from a couple of, holdovers or contrarians, perhaps. But I say that I've been consistent with this since last summer. I think Travis Bazan is the best player in the class. I think there is a combination of intangibles there that, to me, make him different than other players. And that is, there are not many holes in this guy's game. The biggest hole in this guy's game is his throwing. We don't care about that much for fantasy. He is going to play a defensive position. We don't have to get into that right now. But when we just look at pure hitters that also have counting stat skills that translate to fantasy, I think it's Bazan, because in the role that he was in this year for Oregon State, he wasn't going to run as much. I think in the role that he's going to be in pro ball, he's going to run more. He's a plus runner. He's a good base stealer. I don't think that's a problem. 30 might be high, but in this MLB, in a good lineup, I think he gets to the majors fairly quickly. I think that running will be a bigger part of his game because I think he's going to be more of a leadoff hitter in that lineup. Excellent contact skills, arguably the best approach in the last few drafts. This guy does not swing outside the zone. That's his whole thing. You know, he did a whole presentation. I know a lot of the inside baseball background in Bizana. So it's awesome session. I love Bizana. It's one of my favorite players. He did a whole presentation as a sophomore to Oregon State, and the entire presentation was swing more to win less. You can take from that what you will. So he's super patient. He's going to work deep in accounts. He's going to grind at bats, kind of the perfect dynamic leadoff profile. You know, I don't, in a lot of ways, I think that this guy is like a better version of what Jackson Holliday is. And I know that that's crazy to say to a lot of people because he's going to be ranked a lot lower on our top 100. He's in the top 20, but he's not two. Okay. But I think when you look at the body, you look at the exit velocities, you look at the power that he's shown with Wood because he hit like craves MVP in the Cape. I mean, you can sort of eliminate some of that. And I think if this was an American guy that grew up here and had the skills that he had, I don't think this guy gets to college. I think this guy gets signed out of high school. You know, the power increase was because of bat speed increase. That's like deliberate training he's done for multiple years with Driveline. They've talked about it. He's talked about it. It's something that he's been chasing since he came over here. You know, there's a story from somebody I know that's in his camp that I'd worked with for many years. That he actually, when he first came over, had like a duct tape, like weighted bat barrel where he like took a bunch of like coins and like taped it to duct tape and then wrapped it around the barrel and taped it. So it would be like a weighted barrel, like a weighted bat, so he could do bat speed training. It's just above and beyond in terms of the makeup and the drive and all that sort of stuff. And I think you just see it. Even when you have conversations with Travis, you know, which I have on a few different occasions, some recorded, some, you know, in person at games on the sideline after games before the All-Star game last year, he's just a different kind of cat. Like his mentality is very different from even like high level players who are hard workers. It's almost like a mania, you know. He's just built a little bit different. I think people use that expression a lot, right? Hashtag built different. When we say, I think it's true. Like he's just a different kind of guy. And even the road that he followed to get here was so much more arduous than a lot of other players experience, you know, in their journey, especially as Americans to the college game to come over here. Doesn't get to play collegiate national team. He doesn't do all that stuff. He stayed in the Cape. He rakes. I mean, even that Falmouth team last year, which is always like a historically incredibly talented team that doesn't win. They were winning a lot more than they ever had before last year. Opazon was there. So I just think that there's some of that sort of like makeup magic that he has. I've likened it to Jeter. I've likened it to Kobe or MJ or Brady or somebody like that. It's just a different kind of guy. And I think when you look at it, hit tool, doesn't chase, good for average leagues, good for on base leagues. He's got power. He's got the speed to run. You know, it's not unreasonable to think that this guy could be, you know, 280, 370, 20 home runs, 15 to 20 steals early in his career with a ton of runs at the top of the lineup, you know. And, you know, defensively, he's got the athlete. He's one of the better athletes in this draft. And he's 5'11", 6 feet, you know, like he's not small, you know, maybe he's not Charlie Condon or Jack Caglione big, but, you know, not tiny. And I, you know, I honestly think that he's a guy that can fit in really well in Cleveland. And, you know, whether he's in the middle infield, maybe I don't think they would move him right away, but I think there's a chance this guy could move to center field. And we've seen guys make that transition from second base to center field and have some success. We saw it with Mookie Betts, right? It's different. Saw it with Jaren Duran. Jaren Duran is having a great season. arguably the fantasy MVP if you look at where he was drafted and sort of value that he's returning right now. And he was the All-Star Game MVP. I mean, another guy that's had a great season. Somebody I was really out on coming into the year. So I'm eating crow there, and it tastes delicious, and I'm fine with it. You know, big up to Jaren Duran. I got his bobblehead from Worcester over here. So it's good to see him come through and do his thing. It's been an inspiring story for all of us here in Massachusetts, I suppose. In the prospect world, it's good to see these guys, you know, click and do their thing. But, you know, it wouldn't shock me. He's got the tools to kind of move to center field. Like, if they decide to go that direction, it might make some sense, you know. And I know Travis well enough to know that he would try to become the best possible center fielder. So now that I've done my Travis Pastrana infomercial, I think the majority of people would rather have Charlie Condon, the low-hanging fruit, incredible, one of the most historic, one of the best college baseball seasons of all time statistically. He was great this year with Georgia. There's nothing taking that away from him. Goes to Colorado, which we all know is a great place to pitch. But I think that this used to be something years ago when the Rockies still had good players and a lot of good prospects that were pretty high-end, is you would sort of project that everybody that went there would automatically get better and that everything would play up. And we don't sort of think about the differences when you're playing at elevation at a home park versus when you have to come off that elevation and play everywhere else. And there's a few things that come to mind. The way that balls come off the bat, of course. The bigger thing is how breaking balls move, how pitches move there. They don't move the same as they move other places. You get used to seeing maybe more hanging sliders than you're going to see in Oakland, or, you know, you're going to see in San Francisco, or you're going to see in LA. I think that can have an impact on it, right? The other part of it, and Condon hasn't had a checkered injury history or anything like that, it does have some wear and tear in the body playing up there in elevation. We've seen more injuries, more soft tissue injuries. You know, I know there's been some studies on this stuff. I'm not smart enough to really break down the reasons why, but it has been a consistent theme with them. And I think we can sort of contrast it with Cleveland, which right now I believe is the number one park in baseball for left-handed power. Since they sort of removed whatever those gutters were, whatever the heck it was, around the bleachers and the upper deck there, it's now almost caused like a wind tunneling effect where there's way more balls flying out there than there had been previously. So I think like the home park thing gets negated a little bit. I just want to bet on the athletic guy that can run a little bit, that has all these tools, that's done it for a few different years, and we've seen him progress. Condon's awesome. It's huge power. The hit tool's pretty good. He's going to get on base a bunch. It's really fun to dream on. You know, I think it's a pick'em. It's really like, what do you prefer? I think in most drafts, people are probably going to end up taking Condon. And I can't fault him for that. I mean, he had a great season. We think about the huge 70 grade power that he has. I mean, Carlos, I believe, had him ranked above Bazzano. So, you know, and he's going to be higher than Bazzano in our top 100, not my top 100, but in our top 100, he will be higher. So I think that's all things to consider. I would be really happy if I had the number 2 pick this year. You know,
yeah.
I think it was kind of like last year, like the number 3 pick. You're kind of like, I'm going to take whatever falls to me, and then I don't have to feel like I made a stupid decision. I had 3 in one draft. I took over a team in a dynasty league, and I ended up with Skeens there. And right now, I'm pretty happy that I was 3 and not 1, because I would not have taken Skeens 1-1 in that draft. So, all things considered, you know, I do think. There's a lot to think about here at the top. It is a sort of a close clustered group, but I would have it 1-2 with Bazzano and Condon. I don't think I've seen anybody that hasn't had it 1-2 with Bazzano and Condon.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. I think it'll depend if, you know, Sasaki or something comes over, which I don't think is possible, but I think it's the fact he's at Coors is why people are saying Condon. I think that's just kind of, sure, like you said, the low hanging fruit. Because they're so close, then it's just sort of like, oh, well, I'll pick the Coors factor to just kind of boost that up. Do you think either of them will make the opening day roster next year?
Man, I'd be surprised, but you never know. I would be really surprised with Colorado. That's kind of not their MO. But we haven't seen like any top of the draft college guys get picked by them. so we don't really have like a great track record to go off of there. You know, it's mostly been high school guys or international guys that pop and they get moved pretty quick. I would guess that Condon is probably more early summer next year. I think Bazzana maybe has a shot. I think that's there's a possibility there. Maybe they want the pick. He is assigned already to High Lake County. So if he rips it up there, which I suspect he probably will, there's a good chance that he could be in Akron maybe before the end of the season. And when we start to see that, things start to get accelerated. There's also the sneaking thing of like Cleveland making the playoffs and being in the mix. And, you know, I think potentially that could have some bearing on him moving up pretty quickly and just sort of being on that taxi squad or being prepared in AAA. I don't think it will happen, but I don't think we can eliminate all these things based on what we've seen over the last couple of years. A lot of these guys have moved way faster than we had even anticipated they would move. But, you know, it might be more like Dylan Cruz, where he moves up to AAA pretty early and then maybe has some time there before he finally gets the call. It's tough to predict that stuff out because there's so many things that can happen. And a big part of it is injuries that impact the major league lineup. And if, you know, this player is potentially the best option that you have in your organization as a replacement, and you are in, you know, a realistic situation where like, hey, we're competing for a championship here, we're competing for a pennant, you know, I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility. We saw it last year almost with Adolis Garcia going down, and then potentially Wyatt Langford being called up. And I've heard that that was discussed. It was a possibility. It was something that certainly could have happened. Adolis obviously came back and they won the World Series, so it doesn't matter. But we did see Langford obviously debut right away. So it wouldn't be a shock. We're seeing more and more of these players in the first round sort of jump up. I can't say for sure if I think Christian Moore will be the starting second baseman next year for the Angels or not, but it looks like they're shopping Luis Rengifo, and you know, maybe he's their starting second baseman by September. I don't know. It's certainly, I wouldn't put anything past the Angels at this point. So that's certainly a possibility. So I don't know. I mean, it's tough to say, you know, how quickly any of these guys could potentially move, but this is where the draft kind of gets a little bit interesting for me. Cause I think you can go in a couple of different directions here if you want to. Okay. Here at three, if you want to lean in on the pitcher, you can certainly go Chase Burns here. You know, I think that's sort of the unanimous consensus top pitcher in the draft. Personally, I like Burns' stuff. I still think there's some concerns with the fastball getting barreled up maybe more than it should. And I think there might be some development time that's needed, you know, but you never know. These guys come back. He's got some great pitch mix. I mean, like, the curveball is a really good pitch. He barely even threw that curveball, and it's a pretty nasty pitch. I mean, it's like low 80s with dump, you know, like it's got significant depth for how hard that he throws that pitch. Of course, is a very good slider, but I think, and Carlos has said this in our meeting today, and some other folks that I've spoken with have said this, but, you know, I think we're at a place where it's like everyone's maybe overrating Chase Burns, the pitcher, a little bit, just the pitchability side of it. And the other thing, and I had a scout say this to me yesterday that I was chatting with on a Cape Field, and we were talking, his organization took a pitcher in the first round. Won't say who. We were kind of comparing, contrasting the big three with Yesavage, Hagen Smith, Chase Burns. Burns runs a little hot in the mound, man. Like, if you see, I mean, he's juiced up, like coming off the mound, like, I like my starting pitchers to be a little stoic. I know this sounds super old school, like I'm hating on bat flips or whatever. But I do think like you control the game, and part of being a great starting pitcher is controlling your emotions. I think you can show it at times. Certainly Max Scherzer shows it, but Scherzer doesn't show it all the time, you know? And that's something I think Burns will have to tamper down a little bit. We'll see how that all works out. That being said, for me, it's a conversation between J.J. Weatherholt and Nick Kurtz. Weatherholt being the shortstop. Smaller guy, though. Both have checkered injury histories. Kurtz has been hurt for a couple of summers in a row. he's had wear and tear. You know, Weatherholt obviously had the hamstring injury that kept him out for a good chunk of this season. He's kind of been beat up at times. That's something that's lingered. So there is some risk with both of these guys. That being said, they're both excellent hit tool players. Kurtz has a little bit more power. The funny thing is, Kurtz is a little bit better athlete. The athletic testing on Kurtz is a little bit better. There's a chance that Kurtz could play a corner outfield spot. Okay. He's left, so that's why he's never been a third baseman, you know, and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, you look at left-handed power there, incredible approach. There's more athleticism than you realize. There's good power. There's contact. But the college first baseman demographic is scary, which is why I lean Weatherholt here, because I think that when we're talking about two players that are equal value and you're in a dynasty league, it's often better to get the guy who's perceived as the better trade chip. And I think when it's a pick 'em, I'll lean that way. So I'm going to lean that way with Weatherholt. I know that the Cardinals obviously cover their organization. I've had a couple of conversations. They're ecstatic about this pick. They thought he was the best player in the draft. This is a guy that led the nation in batting average as a sophomore. There's power there as well. He's got probably, I don't think he's going to stick at shortstop, but he's going to stick in the infield. It's really just the injury concerns. So I think I lean that way just because I think there's a little bit more upside there. And with all things being equal, both guys have sort of the wart of having some soft tissue injuries, having some injuries that have kept them off the field at certain points in their career. I think I lean with the shortstop and I lean with Weatherholt. That being said, I'm actually taking Kurtz 4. And I don't know if there's a lot of people that would necessarily fully agree with me on that one. I've seen these players. I like Kurtz a lot. I think that the combination of bat-to-ball skills, approach, and power could arguably be the best in the draft. And there's that athleticism component that maybe he is a little bit more, maybe he could play left field. You know, maybe he's a little bit more than just a first base only. He's also a very good defender at first base. So, you know, could be a guy that I think is maybe a little bit slept on. Obviously ends up in Oakland, which isn't ideal, but the ball flies in Vegas, baby, you know, play in Sacramento for a year or two, go to Vegas, you know, it's going to be fine. So I'm taking Kurtz there at 4. Any like questions that on that one? Cause I think that I think a lot of people are probably thinking, why didn't you go with Burns in one of these picks? I think I explained that a little bit. Why didn't you go with Jack Caglione? And I can get into that in a minute, but what are your thoughts here?
I like it. I like Kurtz. Like looking at the data, not knowing anything about him, it's like 60s across the board. It's for me, it's the fact he's a first base, but now you saying that he's an athlete, that that's very intriguing to me. This is why we have you on. You've got the juice.
I got some inside scoops.
I like that. No, I really like that. Because yeah, he's like near, he's ahead of Weatherholt on like some of the Statcast data, using some of like my hit plus thing that I do. It was just the position, the defensive spectrum was kind of bringing him down. And then, you know, Oakland is kind of a bad reputation, but I mean, Oakland's been pretty interesting now. Blade has been doing well. Lawrence Butler has been on fire. Zach Geloff has kind of exceeded expectations. Maybe not this year as much as last year, but he's quite interesting. You know, Oakland's kind of an interesting team right now. Mason Miller, of course. So I really like that. Nick Kurtz. Four, I'll have to take a closer look, you know, once they're playing in professional in the professional leagues and I see more data and all that, but I really like this because I've wanted an excuse to kind of move them up the board, and now I'm hearing it.
Yeah, and I think the other thing with Jack Caglione, to kind of get into a little bit,
yeah,
it's a much smaller data sample. So when you're seeing people sharing data on Twitter and you're reading those numbers, you need to realize that he only had 58 batted ball events in front of a TrackMan device. You know, we're looking at Bazzano's got 112. Condon's got 118. You know, Kurtz has got 96 and had missed some time this year. Weatherholt obviously missed some time. He's got 72. So it's a larger sample size. The thing with Jack Caglione is there's unbelievable power. You know, kind of in line with what we see with Kurtz. Obviously, his 90th percentile EV is a smaller sample of batted balls, but the numbers are absurd. And 111.7, Kurtz is at 110.4. The big difference in the profile is you got a guy in Kurtz who's got a lower chase rate than Bezzana. It's 13.5% versus 38.3% to Cavione. So the question is, when you're no longer facing guys that, as my friend Matt Pajak likes to put it, will be going pro in something other than sports, because there's a lot of guys, even in the SEC, that are not going to play pro baseball at all or their entire careers or for more than a handful of years. What do those numbers look like? Because it's not going to matter what he does in A ball. It's going to be what he does in Double A and Triple A. When he's facing guys that have three pitches, two good secondaries they can land, right? Guys that can spot their stuff. You see a different level of them. We see it even more so in the major leagues, right? We see chase rates, guys that have unbelievable chase rates in the minors, and they drop down to sort of above average to maybe just plus, right? It's not that shining star of like, all right, I mean, chase is 10%. It kind of tapers down to like 19, 20%, right? It's a little different, right? Because the misses aren't as big. The misses are a lot smaller. They're a lot closer to the zone. I wonder how that's going to play out. So that's my big concern with him, which is why I would actually take Chase Burns at five. Mm-hmm. We've talked about Burns already. I think he's probably the most marketable starting pitcher in this draft. Do I like Hagen Smith more? Yeah, I think I do like Hagen Smith more than I like, like Chase Burns, which is why I'm going to put him at six. Hagen Smith to me is really interesting, and this is why. When I was doing the comps on Hagen Smith last week, I put a Matt Strom comp on the fastball because there are not many fastballs that metrically sort of match up with this. It's a low release height, left-handed fastball, you know, decent vert for what the release height is. It's an unbelievable slider. If you look at the numbers in terms of performance against those pitches in the zone, they're ridiculous. Do I know if there's a third pitch? I'm not sure, you know. Probably is changeup cutter. There's something they could probably mix in there that makes sense. We'll see what happens. You know, we could say, it's the White Sox, though. They've got a couple of stars that are looking pretty good right now. You know, I don't know how much development you want to give him on Crochet, but he had never really been much of a starter. I mean, reliever as a freshman at Tennessee. Sophomore year at Tennessee, he did a little bit of both. He had some starts. He was in the pen. You know, he had a late start in the 2020 season, and then the whole pandemic happened, so he didn't get to really build up as a starter. Immediately gets put into a bullpen. Bullpen a couple of years. Injury, comes back. And now he's the best pitcher in the American League at the break, right? So, like, I think when we take a step back and look at it, they haven't been altogether necessarily bad. And, you know, Smith is coming out of a good development program. They're at Arkansas. And I think the other thing with Smith is like Smith has been good in the SEC for multiple years. You know, Chase Burns left the national champions and, you know, went to Wake Forest. I think from a pitching development standpoint, it's not necessarily a bad decision. And there were some issues, I think, with the staff on the way out the door. They put him into the bullpen as a sophomore. Where, you know, you look at Hagen Smith, you know, made 15 starts as a freshman in the SEC with a 4.6 ERA, which is like a 3.6 ERA. 3.6 ERA over 11 games started, 18 appearances as a sophomore in the SEC. This year, he really kicked it up. 16 starts, 2.04 ERA. He's got a 17.3 K per nine, 3.6 walk per nine. That's 161 strikeouts and 84 innings to 34 walks, gave up just five homers. I think there is a case to take him over Burns. I'm not going to do it just yet. Maybe I'll talk myself into it as we get further along here. But for what it's worth, Burns gave up 14 home runs this year. Burns gave up three times as many home runs as Hagen Smith did. A little bit better command, also in the ACC. Which is a step down from the SEC. I'm an ACC guy. I want to say it's equal. It's not equal. It's not equal. And I've seen some times where, like, some future accountants and insurance agents have been barreling up Chase Burns, not necessarily turning him into hits, but getting at least decent hard contact. He's a guy that allows hard contact. I do think it's something that we poo-poo, but I think hard contact suppression, launch angle suppression is a real thing, you know? And I think that when you talk about a low launch fastball on a guy like Hagen Smith, I think that it's right there. I like to shop in the college pitching market to begin with. We've talked about this. I think you need the depth. I think that the value right now has never been as high as it's been in FYP for college pitchers. None of these guys are Paul Skeens. So let's get that through our head. We're not going to see any of these guys start in the All-Star game next year. None of these guys are going to make the All-Star game next year. Probably not for a few years. Okay. I think there's some relief risk with both. Maybe a little bit more with Burns. You know, maybe a little bit more with Burns. The other thing is Wake Forest pitchers, you can go and take back and take a look. We haven't seen many Wake Forest pitchers who get better in pro ball, okay? Because they're optimized. That's one of the best pitching development programs in the country, pro or amateur, right? So I'm kind of talking myself into Hagen Smith here at five. I'm going to stick with it at six. All right, this is where it continues to get interesting, Dylan, because I'm going to continue to let Jack Caglione fall down the board to somebody else, okay? He's going to be a really good player on somebody else's team. I'm actually going to take Bryce Rainier at seven. Okay. Bryce Rainier went 11 overall to the Tigers out of Harvard Westlake, left-handed hitting shortstop, 6'3", 195. He's already signed as well. Really exciting player, in my opinion. The swing has been cleaned up this year. You know, he's got some technical stuff that people didn't like, bat wraps and get a little long at times. Top exit velocities. I mean, this guy hits the ball hard, plays defense, pretty good athlete on top of it. Bigger guy, you know, get like those Seager comps or whatever, which are kind of lazy, but that's the spot where I want to be shopping. I even think there's a case that you could move Rainier up to five if you want to. That's the guy that I want. I think the hit tool's more proven. I think you're banking on a high school shortstop from the California prep ranks, which is – and Harvard Westlake on top of it. That is the best baseball conference in America in high school. It is. It's the best baseball conference in America, okay, for high school play. So he's been more challenged than we'll say someone like Connor Griffin has in Mississippi, all right? Really interesting player in Connor Griffin. Big body, even better athlete than Rainier is. I just think I inch up Rainier a little bit more. Just inch him up a little bit more. A little bit less hit tool questions for me with Rainier, though he is very tooled up, though not as tooled up as Connor Griffin. So I'm shopping there, man, and that's who I'm going to take at seven. Is that the biggest surprise that I've made so far?
I don't think so. I think I expected Caglione to drop for you. I expected Hagen Smith and Chase Burns to be kind of a pick'em, and it was just a question of where you would have them slotted in. I think 5-6 makes a lot of sense. I think what I'm hearing also is you would not be against taking Bryce Rainier five and forgoing the pitching there. It just kind of depends on what you want there. So I'm not that surprised yet. So who do you have eight? Is that Connor Griffin?
We're going to take Connor Griffin there. Okay. I want to bet on the tools. I do think like this is a pick that has some bust potential. The Pirates have not been great in terms of developing hitters. It's a Mississippi prep kid. So it's not that California prep league, right? We're not talking about one of the best leagues in the country. Wasn't great in the showcase circuit, but a freaky athlete, incredible tools. There were some teams that liked him. I don't think we were going to take him as a pitcher, but there were teams that discussed like this kid is a legitimate first rounder, maybe as a pitcher as well. So there's a lot of talent there. But you're talking about a right shortstop, right? As opposed to, you know, the left-handed bat with Rainier. But the projection, this could be the highest ceiling in the class. This could be the 30-30 guy in the class. So I don't want to get him out of the top 10. You know, I'm still going to bank on that. Take him at eight. I think it's a smart pick. And this is where it gets really interesting, because I think you do have a few different players here in the mix for me. You do have Jack Caglione, at 9, I think is a very reasonable pick at this point. I think Brandon Montgomery, that went to the Red Sox, is a very reasonable pick. If he doesn't get injured, I think there's a chance he's inside the top 10. No one can really say for sure, but I think it's a possibility. And I think Christian Moore is another one. That being said, I'm going to stop the fall right now. I'm going to take Jack Caglianone. I think that you're probably going to have to take him higher in FYPDs if you want to take him. Okay. So that being said, this is like when Gray ranks somebody, but he ranks them a little bit lower. So it's always like, hey, you're not going to get this guy here, but he's still good, but just not my target. So that's kind of how I feel on Jack. We don't have as much data as I mentioned. The chase rate to me scares the bejesus out of me, especially when you're talking about a guy who's going to play first base, right? Because he's a worse athlete than Nick Kurtz is, you know? And that's objectively worst at. That's the athletic testing, right? That's the stuff that we're looking at. This isn't just the eye test that we're saying this with, right? It's why this exists. So that's a guy where I have my questions about it, you know? Chase rate scares me a little bit. It's huge EVs, but we also know the EV magic that happens with, you know, college bats and all that sort of stuff. That being said, it's still 70 power. Like, there's no question that it's 70 power. It's loud. Two-way guy, he's not going to pitch. I would be shocked if he pitches. Maybe it's a little bit, but I would imagine that this is not the college of Otani. I don't think that's going to be the case. That being said, the contact and the power, I think, is still worth chasing, especially at this point where the draft starts to get a little bit murky. So we're going to plug him in at 9. And then, you know, at 10, I think it's a conversation between Christian Moore and Brandon Montgomery. Brandon Montgomery, switch hitter, you know, was an absolute monster this year. He's another guy that was a two-way guy. I've seen him pop 99s in the Cape coming in as a reliever. Not somebody that's ever going to be pitching in pro ball, quite frankly. But, I mean, had a tremendous year this year with Texas A&M. 322, 454, 733, 27 home runs. And like all these numbers at this point in this year are just insane. But then on the other side of things, you have Christian Moore from the national champions. And, you know, Christian Moore has been pretty good throughout his career in the SEC. He took a huge step forward this year. I believe just in terms of SEC only play, he actually out hit Charlie Condon, 34 home runs, 375, 451, 797, less strikeouts than Montgomery had. So I think I'm going to lean here with Christian Moore. This is another one where there is some questions how it's all going to translate. It's second base only. But I'm going to lean here with Christian Moore. I just think he's a slightly better athlete. There's more tools. So, yeah, I think I take Moore at 10, which sort of leaves for me, I guess, you know, by proxy, Brady Montgomery would be my 11, though I know we're only really going to 10 today. other guys that I would consider right outside this range. Okay.
Yeah.
Carson Benge.
Okay.
Another two-way guy, only an outfielder now. Another really interesting player and super tooled up. You know, I know a lot of teams were on this guy. We thought that maybe he could even drop inside the top or move up into the top 15. You know, this year, 335, 444, 665, 18 home runs, you know, 49 walks to 51 strikeouts. So I think the hit tool is there. There's power. He's a really good athlete. And I think there's maybe even more that you could maybe get out of this profile in the coming years. Another guy that I would consider right within this range would be Seaver King. I'm not a huge Seaver King guy, but I do think that, and he took a pretty decent underslot pay cut there at 10, just about $800,000. I think it was $800,000 on the nose below slot. So some of that there. But when I look at the rest of this group here, James Tibbs III, really good hitter. There's power, but it's a corner only profile. And it's the kind of profile that worries me a little bit. Cam Smith at third base. I think he's a first baseman. He's not good at first. He's a decent athlete, but just, you know, you're going to have to move this guy maybe to a corner outfield spot or first base. There's a lot of power. The swing and miss really went down last year. But I think when you sort of look at it, it's like, all right, like, I don't know if I necessarily want to bank on this guy, you know. Theo Gillian is a really interesting player. I think if you're going to bet on, you know, a prep outfielder from, you know, a big state in Texas that obviously has really good high school baseball, left-handed hitter. He's an athlete. It's a little bit more of a development play. I do think he's interesting. For me, though, I'm actually going to start moving into some of the comp round guys. And Ryan Walshman. Ryan Walshman went 31 overall to the Diamondbacks. I really like him in this range. I also like the Diamondbacks pick at 29 in Slade Caldwell. He's undersized, left-handed hitter, spark plug, like a better version of what Jet Williams is, more athletic than Jet Williams. But just an absolute gamer. I think a guy that can be like a dynamic leadoff type. So he's another one that's really interesting to me there. And then this is my out there sleeper a little bit in terms of a guy that I'm going to have inside my top 20. Ryan Sloan. So Ryan Sloan is a right-handed pitcher, 6'5", 220 pounds, out of York Community High School in Illinois. So sort of a cold weather guy. But if you know the region, you know that a lot of good high school pitchers have come out of Illinois in recent years. Noah Schultz being one. Owen Murphy being another. Blake Walters being another, right? Every year they seem to have guys that sort of come out of that area. I believe that's where Reed Detmers is originally from as well. So I think it's a really interesting profile. This is a guy with the Mariners pitching development. Already sitting 93 to 96 with feel. Tops out at 99. I think there's a guy that could be sitting 97 in that pitching development by the time he's up. He's got a good slider. You know, he's got the ability to sort of, you know, shape his fastball when he needs it. He's got a pretty good feel for a changeup, which is unusual for prep players to have a breaking ball that they can throw fairly hard and a changeup and, you know, still some projection remaining when they're throwing hard. This is a guy that, like, I want to roster Ryan Sloan everywhere that I possibly can. So, like, that's kind of my guy. I don't think I'm going to be taking him at 13, but, you know, if you're going to wade in the waters of prep pitching in this draft, I think that's the guy to go for. I'll also throw out another sleeper here that I think is interesting. I wouldn't take him in this range. I think he's more like you're in a deeper FYPD. You're there at like pick 40, 41. What are we doing? Cole Mathis, College of Charleston, Cubs pick in the second round, 54th overall. Really good athlete, was a two-way guy at College of Charleston. I saw a ton of him on the Cape last year, was one of those guys that hit double-digit home runs, had 11. He's a really, really interesting player. You know, it may end up at first base. I don't know, but I actually like him more than Cam Smith they took in the first round. The thing is with this draft is you get to a point where, you know, at the back end of this first round, you're talking about guys, PJ Morlando, Braylon Payne, Gerangelo Shinta, who, by the way, is another guy that I think was right in that range. He went 15, you know, Mariners pitching development's been good. He's really good from the right side. I know he's switch pitching. I think at this point, if Shinta is a switch pitcher, it's going to be, and JJ kind of brought this up, and I think it's a good point, it's going to be more like he faces a guy who's a lefty who really can't handle lefty breaking balls because he doesn't throw as hard from the left side. But his slider's really good from the left side. So maybe he just, like, goes left-handed and throws that guy, like, three or four sliders, tries to eat him up. You know, it's a matchup play. But I think it's predominantly going to be right-handed. He sits 95, 96 from that side. And then we wrote up an article today kind of, or on Monday that was released on the site, kind of detailing some of these guys. And I think Shinta is also like in this range really interesting. Now, getting back to my point, not crazy about Kalen Culpepper, you know, I'm not crazy about PJ Morlando. Vance Honeycutt's got a ton of tools and he's enticing in that Orioles organization. He's kind of like a supercharged version of what Judd Fabian is, but more power, faster, elite center fielder. But there's some swing and miss. There's some concerning swing and miss there that would worry me a little bit. That being said, it is the Orioles. They've done pretty well with this profile. So I think of these guys I don't like, I'd probably push them up. Cam Caminiti, you know, left-handed pitcher from, you know, Arizona. Many viewed him as the top prep pitcher in the class. It's sort of in a pronation profile where like he can ride the four seam a little bit. And, you know, I think he's got good feel for the changeup. And, you know, the breaking ball stuff isn't really great. Like it's pretty inconsistent, you know, curve slider that he shows. Cash Mayfield, big lefty, certainly interesting. And I think anybody that the Padres take is a little interesting. Ben Hess, I'm not all that into. I had heard that he was dropping big down the board. You know, he kind of jumped up boards a little bit. Dante Norrie, I don't think anybody had ranked within the top 30 anywhere. He goes to 27 to the Phillies. Walker Yannick is a really good all-around player. He can hit a little bit. He's a really good defensive catcher. Houston doesn't really have any catching in the organization. I think if you're looking for a fantasy catcher, Malcolm Moore at 30 that went to the Rangers is probably a better bet just from like an offensive standpoint. Like if I'm in an organization, I'm drafting Yannick, fantasy hat on, I'm taking Moore. So it's an interesting conversation to have, but I think you can kind of see here just by the tone of my voice and my lack of enthusiasm here for a lot of these players. It's going to be like, hey, who performs? Who's showing good tools? Who do we get like really good reports on? Another really interesting pick that's kind of in the second round to me is Tyson Lewis, who went 51st overall to the Reds. I think he's interesting, but it's a Nebraska prep shortstop. We haven't seen many high school players come out of Nebraska and be successful. So that's kind of a concern as well. And then I think it just starts to get into the waters of guys that you're not going to be thinking about in the first round. This might be a year where the back end of your, if you're in a 30 team league, the back end of your first round might be a lot of guys that end up getting thrown back or sort of unowned that are prospects that were already signed the year before or drafted the year before. And then we'll backfill probably with some international players, depending upon when your FYPD takes place. So that could be interesting as well, but kind of wraps up for me here, Dylan, but yeah, I think like you want to pick in the top 10 in this draft. Like if you're in the FYPD, you want a top 10 pick because after that, you might as whether you're at 15 or 24, I don't know if it matters that much. So if you're a competing team and you're going to be at the back end of your first round, if you can trade those FYPD picks, the deadline for some pieces to backfill, I say do it.
I like it. I think if you're also in the back end of the first round, pay attention to how they do in their professional debuts. Pay attention to the RoboScout articles to see who's popping, who's the Colt Emerson of the class that suddenly pops into the first round because of their performance in high A or double A or low A. So this is fantastic. We've gone over an hour of just jam packed full of Jeff wisdom. I love it. I was taking notes. I'm learning a lot here. As you know, I'm not the most versed in the college game and definitely even less in the high school game. So this is very incredible. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. All right, man. Well, there we go. We're going to wrap it up here. This has been the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. For Jeff, for Dylan, thanks for tuning in.
Cheers.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.